know what time it is? It's time to ball about the South with C. Wood. Ball about the South, coming at you from a Southern perspective on the NFL, NBA, HBCU, and of course, some of the best talk and analysis on the SEC. Real sports talk, real Southern flavor. Follow me and the show at C. Wood on Sports on X and IG. And now, it's time to ball about the South. Yes, sir, it is C. Wood back in with this, the latest episode of Ball About the South with C. Wood. And I definitely appreciate you coming in to join me here. And you know how we start this thing off. I definitely ask you one favor. I appreciate you coming in, but I do ask you a favor or two. Just basically to like, subscribe, comment on the show. Let me know what you think. If you have Apple, if you're listening on Apple, listen on Spotify, I would appreciate you rating the show. Give me a 5-star rating if you think it deserves it, but whatever you put in, I would just really appreciate the feedback. And again, I want to definitely welcome you back to Ball About the South with C. Wood. Man, let's get into it. We've got a lot to talk about if we recap what we talked about. Oh, no, sorry. Not recap what we talked about. We recap what we saw this past weekend in the NFL and in college football. A lot to talk about, obviously, around these parts, man. Yeah, really the biggest talk around the SEC the last couple of weeks as we started this season. You see all the losses that the SEC has taken against non-conference opponents, which is, you know, it's pretty hard pill to swallow for a lot of people around here, man. Not used to the SEC losing so many games, but it happens. It's not the first time, won't be the last. But is it really of a major concern when you sit there and you look at some of the non-conference losses that the SEC has taken so far early this season? Obviously, there's one that sticks out this weekend. Then again, there are actually two. Texas A&M, man. What a game that was for Miami. Their quarterback, Van Dyke, doing his thing. Miami coming back in that football game, beating the Texas A&M Aggies by a score of 48-33, beating by double digits. Big fourth quarter, really big second half. They outscored the Aggies 27-16 there in the final half of play after leading the game 21-17 at the end of the first half. And it's just another game, man, where Texas A&M just really just with a flat performance. It's really stunning to see it. This team is more talented than this, man. Miami, I think we saw that this is still a very talented football team. Do not get me wrong, okay, but man, I just don't understand this A&M team. I really don't. I thought really the one place where this team could be trusted was defensively. Well, Tyler Van Dyke, 21 of 30, 374 yards, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, for a quarterback rating of 229.7. Man, I mean, just lit up this A&M defense in the second half of that game. Lit them up. Big plays were the name of the game, because if you look at the stats, Miami, 16 first downs, Texas A&M at 26. Third down efficiency. 8 for 18 for the Aggies, 3 for 9 for Miami. Now, obviously, you got to throw those two interceptions there that Connor Wigman threw. He went 31 for 53, 336 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. Those 2 picks were huge. But I don't know what to say about this Texas A&M team, man. I really don't. You look at turnovers, obviously the two interceptions by Wegman. He had one fumble loss as well. Miami lost a fumble also. Total yards, the Hurricanes 451, Texas A&M 433. Texas A&M had the ball almost a little bit over 4 minutes more than did the Hurricanes, but they were able to move the ball. 8 for 18 third down efficiency is not bad. 2 for 3 fourth down efficiency. But it was not enough. So now it's almost like it's back to the drawing board for A&M. They ranked now, obviously fell out of the rankings. They were ranked 23rd coming into that game. Man, I really don't know what to say about that game. I really thought A&M, I really didn't know for sure. I predicted A&M would go and win the game. Obviously, I didn't feel great about that. But I felt like, okay, maybe A&M's going to kind of turn this thing around a little bit. And they look like the same Aggies that we've seen the last couple seasons. And Jimbo Fisher, I mean, again, full of excuses. It's all you seem to hear from him. And that hot seat continues to get warmer and warmer there in Aggie land. So crazy. Congrats to Miami, though. And they go to 2-0. Inside what is a very interesting ACC. Not really sure what's going to go on in that league besides, or at least after Florida State. I still expect Florida State to win that league. But after that, I'm not really sure what the landscape's going to look like. Anyway, huge win for them nonetheless. We'll talk about that other game that the SEC lost in non-conference. You know the game I'm talking about, the Texas Longhorns and the Alabama Crimson Tide. But before we do that, man, we're going to get, you know, you got some quarterback blues going on in that game with Jalen Milroe leading the way for Alabama. We're going to get to another game in the NFL ranks on Sunday afternoon that was, to me, even worse. You got Alabama fans about to flip their lid for what happened at Bryant Denny Stadium Saturday night. But Tennessee Titans fans, to me, should be even worse for what they saw, for what we saw, me being a Titans fan myself, in the Superdome, in the Caesars Superdome, that is, against the New Orleans Saints on Sunday afternoon. Ryan Tannehill. And we talked about this, man. It may sound like an excuse, and I guess to a certain degree it is, because these guys are making money. They're making big time money, obviously. But these skill players, at least these skill players, man, offensive, I would say even offensive linemen, all of those guys, really, I guess really your linemen end up playing in the preseason anyway, but your quarterback, he needs to get some reps in one of these games. He's just going to sit out the entire preseason. It's got to stop. It's allowing for sloppy play in a lot of games. That, you know, we've been used to seeing that here the last few years. But what we saw was even worse with Ryan Tannehill this past Sunday. All you need to know, Ryan Tannehill came away with a 28.8 passer rating in the Titans 16-15 loss to the New Orleans Saints. 28.8, and I'm not sure that it was that good. And there's no question. You can sit here and say, oh, well, it's just an excuse. There's no question the lack of reps in the preseason, the lack of, you know, being out there with his boys, being out there with his receivers in a game situation hurt him on Sunday, and it ended up hurting the Tennessee Titans and, to me, cost them a victory on the road. 16-34 for Tannehill in the game, 198 yards, 0 touchdowns, 3 huge, ugly interceptions. 3 of them. But even in to a degree worse than that, forget about the interceptions. There were at least two or three plays, at least, maybe probably more than that, where I don't think there's any question that a guy that has had his reps, that has some rhythm, is going to hit these open passes 9 times out of 10. And Tannehill was not even close on any of them. Two of those passes, one of them for sure would have went for a touchdown. The flea flicker where at midfield there in the, I think it was in the fourth quarter, Derrick Henry, and I can't remember who that was he was trying to hit down the right sideline. I can't remember if it was Okonkwo. Whoever it was wide open. Wide open. And right, the play was set up beautifully. I thought it was a fantastic play call by Tim Kelly. Man, Titans fans talking about play calls. But, man, look, you can probably talk about some of them, man. But you can't talk about that one. That one was set up beautifully by the way the drive had gone. The Titans had driven that ball to midfield. They had gotten a couple first downs. And it was just the perfect play call for what New Orleans was doing defensively. They had no idea what was going on. Receiver wide open down the right sideline around the 20, 25-yard line. He could have walked in the end zone, and Tannehill overthrew him by about 15 yards. And there were a couple plays to Tyjae Spears that could, if they didn't go the distance, they could have been really big gainers that the Tennessee Titans did not get the chance to capitalize off of. And we're talking about a 16-15 ball game, man. 5 field goals, 5 Nick Folk field goals is all the Titans got all afternoon. Now, it's a good thing that Nick Folk was signed in by the Titans from the New England Patriots a couple weeks ago. So that was a good thing. I think they have. I mean, obviously, Nick Folk has been around a long time, but he is a guy that I think can be very responsible, especially, I would say, within 50 yards. I mean, 50 yards within in, I don't think there's any question he will be a really good kicker. Now, you know, some of the longer field goals, maybe he's not going to be that guy. But, you know, even if you just kind of get some of those shorter field goals down that the Tennessee Titans seem to have missed the last few years, I think that'll be an improvement in the kicking game. So, but that was all they got this past Sunday. And it was a shame, man. It was a shame for guys like Tyjae Spears, who had, I thought he had a pretty good debut. You look at Derrick Henry, his stats on the day. He came out like gangbusters in this football game. He started out really fast running the football. He did not play in that first series of downs. The Titans actually got the ball right off the bat, even though they kicked the ball to New Orleans to start the game. New Orleans fumbled the ball. I think it was Rashid. Ball was really just taken from him. and the Titans set up shop there inside the 20-yard line. Of course, they only came away with the field goal. But there was a penalty on first down that put the Titans behind the sticks. So the offense decided to go with the passing offense, the passing personnel. So Spears, you know, was in the game, and Derrick Henry did not play in that first set of downs. So he came in the second set of downs and ran like Derrick Henry about 5 or 6 seasons ago, running over people, really showing that he had, maybe he's gained a lot of that burst back that we were thinking that he had lost. And then they kind of just went away from it. I say, in the second quarter, between second and third quarter, they kind of halfway went, kind of tried to go back to it a little bit in the fourth. And I think that was the play that kind of, those were the plays that kind of set up that flea flicker that went awry. This is just crazy game, man. But Derrick Henry, 15 rushes, 63 yards. Again, not bad numbers. I mean, 4.2 average at a long of 18 yards. He had one long reception off of a screen. So 2 receptions, 56 yards. Went over 100 yards total. DeAndre Hopkins had 7 catches, 65 yards. I thought he had a pretty good game. Had a really, kind of a going back and forth there with Lattimore, who was excellent there, the corner for the Saints. I thought that was a really good battle all day long. I thought Hopkins held his own for the most part. There were a couple of plays where Lattimore or another Saints defender were able to kind of overpower him and get to the ball before he did and make a play on it. But other than that, I thought Hopkins looked pretty good. That was just my look at it. So, I mean, you look at defensively. I mean, you give up 16 points. And you look at the rush. The pass rush was on, especially early in the game. Now, the Saints' left tackle was beat badly, so they had to end up giving him a little bit of help. Arden Key was a beast, beating that left tackle time and time again there early in that game. So things quieted down a little bit off the edge, but then it was DeNico Autry coming in from his spot there on the defensive line. Both those guys were two of the highest rated pressure. I mean, the status where it calculates players that got pressure on the quarterback. They were two of the highest in the NFL here in week one. I think it was Arden Key that had 8 pressures, and I think Autry had 7. I thought the defense played pretty well, except for a few glitches here in the secondary. Especially that long pass there to really kind of put the game away there at the end on third down from Derek Carr to Rashid. He ended up getting behind the defense and put the game away to make it, to make that 16-15 score stand up. I thought too many big plays at really ill-opportune times was the only thing that I would say was a negative from the defense on Sunday. So you sit there and you look at that. Really good defensive performance wasted. I thought you wasted some good runs from Derrick Henry. A lot of good things offensively other than anything Tannehill did, because Tannehill really stunk up the joint. And I just think, forget about how you feel about Ryan Tannehill as a player, as a passer, as a quarterback overall. I just think if he was just in a little bit more rhythm, he hits a couple of those plays and the Titans come back to Nashville with a victory. That's just my thought on that. As badly as he played, if he just hit one or two of those plays, the Titans win the game. Anyway, we're going to take a look at the rest of the AFC South. We'll take a look at the AFC South, the NFC South as well. Huge win for the Falcons over the Carolina Panthers. Bryce Young did get his first touchdown pass of his NFL career. Happy to see that. Bijan Robinson did get his first touchdown reception on just a crazy move that he made to get into the end zone. It was a little bit of lingerie on the deck in my Bill Raftery voice. A little lingerie on the deck. So the Falcons struggled there early, but they come away with a huge victory, 24-10, over the Panthers to go to 1-0. Huge win for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, maybe the win of the day, going up to Minnesota and shocking the Vikings, 20-17. Really good performance there. Baker Mayfield, not the best, but hey, doesn't matter. They came away with the victory. That's what matters at the end of the day. Look at the Texans in the C.J. Stroud debut. They go down to Baltimore Ravens 25-9. I thought some good things from the defense in that game from Houston. Will Anderson got a pressure. They were able to intercept Lamar Jackson. But just not enough offense for that team right now. It's going to be a work in progress for that, as obviously. Anyway, so it's kind of looking at some of those games that we had here in the AFC and NFC South. Really quick, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into that ball game there in Tuscaloosa. Alabama going down to Texas. We'll talk about a couple of those games in the NFL. We'll do all of that on the other side. You're listening to Ball About the South with C. Wood. Okay, y'all, we're back in Ball About the South, and we're going to get into that football game that we saw on Saturday night there at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. The Tide, third rank coming into the game, they go down pretty hard to the Texas Longhorns, 34-24. It was the first loss by the Alabama Crimson Tide at home in their last 21 games. It was the first non-conference loss in the last 57 games, which dated back to 2007, and that is the season where Nick Saban first, that was his first season there in Tuscaloosa. Crazy. So all of the records just keep falling. All of the records. First it was the assistant coaches. That's gone. That's been gone. Kirby, Jimbo, now Sarkisian of all beating Nick Saban here in just the last year and a half now. You look at, and you sit there and you look at some of the streaks that Alabama has right now. This insane stuff. 57 straight games at home to non-conference opponents. I mean, you can sit here and say, well, Alabama doesn't play a whole lot of really good teams at home other than the teams in the SEC. Well, that would be a true state. Still, I don't care. 57 straight is crazy. And you look at some of the other records, man. All of this stuff is just insane, and it has really worked to spoil a fan base. It is straight spoiled this fan base. There's just no other way to say it. There's no other way to put it. Some of the stuff that I've been looking at on social media this weekend, some of it is downright disgusting. Some of it is just, I don't know, man, just straight stupid, to be honest with you. And I don't want to sit there and call anybody stupid or anything like that. You're entitled to your opinion and all of that. Don't get me wrong. But this whole thing has been crazy. And a great deal of that centers around Jalen Milroe. Man, it's the reason I wrote the article that I wrote on ballaboutsouth.com. There's my website. Please visit it there. I will definitely be putting more content on there as well. And you can also listen to the shows on that website. Again, nothing special, but you can do that on that website, ballaboutsouth.com. But you sit there, man. That was the reason why I wrote that article. Because I knew this was kind of going to come. I expected Alabama to lose a game somewhere. Didn't know where it was going to be, or at least one game. I thought Alabama would win this game against Texas. I really did. I had the score. I almost had the score right. My prediction was 34-23 Alabama. Obviously, the score ended up 34-24 Texas. So I had the numbers right, almost. Just had them flip-flop the wrong way. But anyway, first of all, really good performance by Texas. You have to sit there and you have to get that out. They out-physicaled Alabama, which I think to me is the more troubling issue from what I saw Saturday night. But you got a lot of people that really come down hard on Jalen Milroe. And don't get me wrong, it's warranted to a degree. Some of it is. I mean, he did not look good on Saturday night. He didn't. And I think everyone would agree with that. I think Jalen Milroe would agree with that. I think Nick Saban would agree with that. But some of the stuff that I've been seeing is just totally ridiculous. Oh, he's not an SEC quarterback. He doesn't know how to read defenses. He doesn't know how to do this. He doesn't know how to do that. He's trash. He's this. He's that. I thought a lot of it was over the top, man. I really did. Man, I just been going back and forth with some Alabama fans about it all weekend. It's got to be frustrating, especially when you sit there and you look at Alabama losing the game, then going through what Titans fans went through with Ryan Tannehill on Sunday. It's a frustrating weekend, man. It was a frustrating weekend, that's all I could tell you. But my thing is, for Jalen Milroe, we'll start there as we kind of assess what we saw Saturday night. There was a lot of bad. Obviously, the two interceptions jump out at you. They jump off the page. Okay, one of those interceptions led to a touchdown. Might as well call it a pick six because it was the next play that Texas was in the end zone. That was the one. That was the turning point. That was the backbreaker. It put Texas up 27-16. The game was ultimately over at that point. The one in the first half was equally as bad. Both of those interceptions were terrible interceptions. There's just no other way to put it. You can't make those throws at this level. He stared down the receiver, and the Texas defender just sat there and jumped the route. Pretty simple. So those are things that, going forward, Jalen Milroe has to get better at, whether he's in the lineup or not. So the question floated around in Alabama fans is, should Nick Saban have taken out, or should he have benched Milroe in favor of Tyler Buckner, who is said to be the second-string quarterback, or for Ty Simpson, who is said to be the third-string? For me, this was my response to that. I'm like, look, as much as Jalen Milroe has struggled at times in this game, I just struggled to find a spot where it was feasible or justifiable to put him in the game. I mean, to take him out of the game. I think if you were going to do it, it had to have been in the first half. If you wanted to do it, if Nick Saban wanted to do it, now 13-3, have at it. It would have made sense. To a degree. But he didn't do it. He elected not to. So at that point, when it becomes 13-6, Alabama drove down and got a field goal right before the half. Right? I heard some people saying, oh, well, it was just street ball and blah, blah, this and blah, blah, that. It was unorthodox and all that. Well, unorthodox or not, they ended up getting a field goal out of it. And they cut the lead from one-score game at 13-6. And Alabama was getting the ball back to start the second half, to start third quarter. And there were more, I'd say 70% of Alabama fans on Twitter wanted to replace Milroe at halftime. And I'm just sitting there like, did we not just score? Did we not just score? Was it a touchdown? No. But they just drove down from the 38-yard line. Alabama took the ball to the 38-yard line. They got the ball down to around the 10-yard line of Texas. And we know what happened right there. You had the penalty where the offensive lineman was downfield illegally. It was understandable why he was downfield. Milroe threw the pass looking for Jermaine Burton in the end zone. Almost threw the interception, but should have been intercepted. Thank goodness it wasn't intercepted, but it was tipped in the air and obviously went to Jermaine Burton. He caught it. But obviously, the penalty brought the touchdown back, so Alabama had to settle for the field goal. Okay, so it was a bad throw. But if you go back and look at the replay, Jermaine Burton was open. It wasn't a bad decision by Milroe. The pass itself was the bad. It was a terrible throw. But he got away with it, and you got a field goal. So you come out in the third quarter, you drive again. He hits the pass to Isaiah Bond, sets them up around the 30-yard line, the Texas 30-yard line. And then you come out and throw another pass to Jermaine Burton. Touchdown. But again, it gets called back for a holding penalty on the offensive line. So you had to settle for three there. But you got two consecutive drives to end the first half and to start the second half where you scored points. And you're sitting there looking at the scoreboard. It's 13-9. Alabama's trailing. But Alabama Twitter, Alabama Nation is all saying, oh, well, you know what? He needs to come out of the game. Take him out. I'm just not, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just old school, but I'm not taking my quarterback that has at least some rhythm. As badly as he has played at times, he's kind of rolling a little bit right now. He's got something going. He's got a little momentum. We've got a little momentum as a team. We're one score behind. We're at home. The crowd is into the game. And I'm going to take out the quarterback that at least has a little bit of rhythm to bring in a cold quarterback that has not played one single down of meaningful football for the University of Alabama. That is what Bama Nation wanted to happen. I could not understand that. I'm sorry. So again, if he had taken him out first half, just to see what Buckner or whoever could have done, cool. But you've gotten into the second half. You've got this guy into at least a little bit of a rhythm. I'm not taking him out of the game. To me, there was no instance in the second half, unless it was like way at the end of the game, where he should have been taken out of the game. None. So I really don't understand what people in Bama Nation are talking about. I just really don't. I don't get that logic. So they've come down on him really hard. Again, like I said, some of it is warranted, some of it is not. But he's not the only reason they lost this game. Because if you sit there and you look at this thing, one of those touchdowns there, right there at the beginning of the fourth quarter, end of the third, beginning of the fourth quarter, Alabama took the lead. They went up 16-13. He led a drive. He took, he hit Jermaine Burton on the long pass. And Alabama actually took the lead. They took the lead in the game, 16-13. But the defense let them down. They came out. Texas was in the end zone in like three plays to go back up 20-16. Then, of course, the terrible interception by Milrow happened. Texas goes up 27-16. But then even after that, Milrow comes back, leads Alabama on another drive. Not only do they get the touchdown, they get the two-point conversion as well. They close it to 27-24. They're within a field goal. We're still talking about 8-9 minutes left in the game. And what does Alabama's defense do? Texas is back in the end zone again in like four plays. But yet, I look at Bama Twitter, I look at, you know, Facebook, social media, period. I see very little about the defense giving up two touchdowns immediately after Alabama scored a touchdown. And you sit there and you go back to these last couple of losses last year to Tennessee. What happened? Alabama goes up 49-42. They give up a touchdown late. That ties the game. Alabama, we know what happened. Alabama missed their field goal. There was like 30 seconds, 20 seconds left. Defense gives up big chunks of yardage, basically just like the Buffalo Bills did to Patrick Mahomes in that AFC Championship game. Tennessee kicks the field goal, wins the game. LSU game, same thing. Alabama's leading at LSU. They give up the game-winning touchdown. They give up the game-winning two-point conversion. Those were the things that Alabama teams used to do. They didn't just close you out offensively. They closed you out defensively. They found a way to get a stop. Even in 2000, this is as recent as 2021, the Auburn game, Alabama got a stop in overtime to set up the two-point conversion to John Mechie to win that game and propel themselves back into the playoffs. The last couple seasons, they have not gotten those plays from the defense. But all I hear, all I seem to hear anyway, It's what the offense is not doing. Whether it was Bill O'Brien last season and right now, whether it's Jalen Milroe or Tommy Reeves, who people are coming down on hard as well. He doesn't know what he's doing. His play calls make no sense. And he has been the offensive coordinator for the University of Alabama for 2 games. Yeah. So, disappointing loss, man. Disappointing loss for Alabama, 34-24 to Texas. Really quick on Texas. My opinion really hasn't changed much on them. I still think this is a team that's probably going to lose a couple games. I mean, they were impressive in a lot of ways. They did what they had to do. They made plays when they had to make them. And a lot of times, that just that element of a football team or a basketball team, they come out and they get a hoop when they have to get it. The crowd is in their face yelling or whatever, and they come out and they get a hoop when they have to get it. That, in a lot of ways, is just as impressive as when they're just really super athletic or they just have just a really, really good basketball team, a really good football team, really good offensive football team, whatever. Just the ability to just make plays. And that's what Texas did the other night. So give them credit. But for me, if I was sitting there looking at that game Saturday night and the score wasn't at the bottom of the screen, I would have sworn, especially when you sit there and factor in that Jalen Milroe threw 2 interceptions and gave up 10 points, basically, off of those interceptions, I'd have thought Texas won the game by 17 to 21 points, at least. Just judging by the stats, judging by the flow of the game, Texas was in control of that game for the most part. I say except for the third quarter. Texas was in control of that football game. I would have thought they would have won by at least 17 points. Maybe 20, 21 points. Seriously. And Alabama was still in the game down 3 with about 8 minutes to go. So, I mean, what does that mean for Texas going forward? I don't know. I you know, Ewers looked good. He looked good. But Ewers looked good against Alabama early before he got hurt last season. And he looked good against Oklahoma. And he looked good maybe again other game or two there. The rest of the season, he was mediocre at best in a season where Texas lost 4 other games than the one that they lost to Alabama. They ended up losing 5 games last year. So, I don't have the confidence that Texas is going to be this team that's going to go undefeated. And they have a favorable schedule there in the Big 12. They get Kansas State at home. I pick Kansas State to win the Big 12. They get Kansas State at home. But, I don't know, man. I mean, I love their receivers. I think their defense is pretty good. But Alabama was able to make some plays the other night. Texas took away the run. But Milroe, everybody's talking so bad about Milroe. But guess what? He threw 3 touchdown passes. No, sorry, 2. He threw 2 touchdown passes of long variety. So if Milroe can do that, what is Oklahoma QB going to be able to do? What is some of these other QBs in the Big 12, what are they going to be able to do against this Texas defense? Just something to think about, in my opinion. But anyway, really big 34-24 win for the Longhorns. Yeah, so we'll see what happens going forward. Alabama gets South Florida in Tampa this coming weekend. Will Jalen Milroe be the starting quarterback? That is the question. It would not surprise me if he starts, but I think obviously the leash is going to be a lot shorter. But it would not surprise me if Tyler Buchner is the starter coming up this coming Saturday in Tampa. We'll see how it goes. But this is, really tough stretch for Alabama after this. They get Ole Miss at home, and then you're talking about A really tough slate after that. So we'll see how they can respond. And I'm going to say it really, really quick, man. Nick Saban, man, I think all of us would agree that he's lost a little bit of an edge to himself. He needs to get it back. I mean, this team, they're talking a lot. We've seen a lot of talk from this team. That's something we never really seen from Nick Saban football teams. And they're not doing anything to back it up. I think he needs to kind of get that edge back where he puts some fear into these guys. I don't know, man. It'll be interesting. On the other side of the state, the Auburn Tigers, they go to the other side of the country and get a big win. I'm not going to sit here and another set of crazy fans in this state. Auburn fans claim they're not crazy or whatever. They claim Alabama fans are the crazy ones. But a lot of them are sitting there running around here talking about that felt like a loss in the game. Their 14-10 victory over Cal. They're in California this past Saturday night. I don't care what it looked like. I don't care what it felt like. It's a W. Your team won 5 games last season. You won 5 games. You've already won 2 this season. You're 2-0. And like I told you on the show last week, I felt like Cal would keep that game close. I thought there would be more points scored. And obviously, that's a concern for Auburn going forward, because after this weekend, when they play Sanford, which is an FCS team here in the Birmingham area, then they have that 5-week gauntlet between them that is going to be brutal. You got Georgia in there. You have a trip to LSU in there. You ended up with the 2 Mississippi schools in Auburn, and you started with Texas A&M on the 23rd of this month. Tough, tough stretch. It's going to absolutely tell us everything we need to know about Auburn. It's going to define their season, no question about it. They have to try to win a couple of those games. So you got that win. You're going to get the win this coming weekend. You're going to be 3-0. If you can find 2 more wins out of those 5, you got 5 wins, which you had last year, and you still have 3 or 4 games to go. I mean, I don't get the, it felt like a loss. I don't get that, man. I'm sorry. I thought Cal, I told you, I saw that their first game. I thought Cal was pretty impressive. And I was impressed with them Saturday night. I think that was a good win by Auburn. So, congrats to Auburn for getting that win. Georgia, a couple more, a little bit more struggle again, but they did what they had to do. LSU just all over Grambling. I hate to see that for Grambling, but big win for the Tigers. Florida gets a big win. We'll see what Florida has as they host the Tennessee Volunteers this coming week. Tennessee gets a win over Austin Peay. Kentucky wins. South Carolina, big win. So everyone else did what they had to do. Ole Miss, Mississippi State. Mississippi State, really close win there against Arizona at home. So, man, just doing what they had to do. That's what it comes down to, doing what you got to do. So, I mean, I would much rather be a team that did that than a team that did not do what they had to do, meaning Alabama, meaning Texas A&M. Right? So, anyway, really good weekend of football, either way you look at it. So we're going to come back. We're going to end the show. We're going to talk a couple more of those NFL games here in the NFC and AFC South. I'm going to set you up for my – got another show coming up this week. I'm going to try to do 2. We'll do a recap show, and then we'll do a preview show later in the week around Thursday or Friday. We'll hit you with that to get you ready for the weekend slate of games. Anyway, we'll be right back. Ball About the South. We'll be right back. All right, man. We're going to get back in to Ball About the South here. We're going to close up. On this segment, we're going to talk some winners and losers from this past week. Week 1 in the NFL, week 2 in college. And we'll do this on a weekly basis. This is my recap show, and we'll come back at you again later this week, and we'll kind of preview some of the games coming up this coming weekend. But for me the winner. For me, the biggest winner of this weekend is the Miami Dolphins. And I don't think it's even close. I mean, there are a lot of, you just kind of skim through the league, skim through the scores. There are a lot of, you know, obviously good performances that we saw on Sunday afternoon. But for me, the Dolphins stick out. And for a couple of reasons. I mean, look, they got a really big road win there in L.A. against the Chargers. Justin Herbert was not himself, and the Dolphins, they took advantage of it. Tua, 28 for 45, 466 yards, 3 touchdowns. He did have 1 interception, but man, huge numbers from Tua, and a lot of those went to Tyreek Hill, 11 catches, 215 yards, 2 touchdowns for him, 215 yards for Tyreek Hill, 78 yards and 4 receptions from Jaylen Waddle. Huge performance. The Dolphins get that late touchdown. They missed the extra point, but they made a stand up with the defense there, stopping the Chargers before they could get in field goal range to try to win the game. Huge, huge win for the Dolphins. And then you sit there and you look at what happened last night on Monday Night Football. That's where you have to say that the Dolphins are your big winner of the weekend. You got to. I mean, you got your two main competitors in the AFC East, the Bills and the Jets. The Bills look horrible, at least Josh Allen did. I can't say that the Bills look horrible. Josh Allen looked horrible. 3 interceptions in that game, lost a fumble. He's been a turnover machine for a while now, so it's not really that shocking that it happened. But for me, I was looking at the Bills being a team that kind of took a couple steps back anyway. And then that happened last night. And then you sit there and you look at the Jets. Unfortunately, they lose their quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, for the season with a ruptured Achilles. Very unfortunate. 4 plays into the season, which is just crazy to even think about. But you sit there and think about it, you know, look, injuries are a part of the game, unfortunately, sometimes. That is just a part of it. So if you're the Dolphins, man, you're unquestionably the king of the hill right now in the AFC East. Unquestionably. I do think, you know, the Jets can still be pretty decent. Obviously, the Bills have the talent to be decent, but we'll see how they do it. You know, all this time we talked about Aaron Rodgers. A lot of people say, well, you know what, he's too old. Now, I'm in that boat. I thought he was, I thought Aaron Rodgers was really pretty much done anyway. And so I hate to see this happen to him, but I really think that I wasn't really looking for a whole lot out of this situation with the Jets anyway. But obviously, when you say that, a lot of people will come back, well, with this defense, with the running game, you know, you sit there talking about Breece Hall, and then they go out and get Dalvin Cook, and then you have a wide receiver that, you know, that can take over a game like Garrett Wilson with that huge touchdown, unbelievable, ridiculous touchdown that he caught from Zach Wilson last night. You sit there and you put all that together, Aaron Rodgers probably really wouldn't have to do a whole lot. Well, I say the same thing about Zach Wilson. We all know how bad Zach Wilson has been since he has been in the league. I understand all that. I'm not sitting here trying to tell you that Zach Wilson is going to all of a sudden become a Pro Bowl quarterback or all-pro quarterback or anything like that. I'm not trying to say that. But just like Aaron Rodgers, all he had to do was just be out there. Can you kind of say the same thing about Zach Wilson? It's not exactly the same, no, because Aaron Rodgers is always going to be a much, much more viable threat than a Zach Wilson. But with the defense, if you're just playing it close to the best, man, you're not going to give up a whole lot of points. Just don't turn the ball over. You're going to be in game. So don't get me wrong, this is a really hurtful thing for the Jets, and this to me gives the Dolphins a huge advantage in that division. But I still think the Jets could be a team that fights for a playoff spot because of that defense. That defense is filthy, man. filth. So, for me, the biggest winner of the weekend is Miami Dolphins. I mean, you got other winners, the Rams. You look at all these upsets. Or, you know, you can call them upsets or whatever. Huge win for the Rams. That was a little bit unexpected. The Raiders went on the road at the Broncos. Obviously, the Saints. I mean, look, winning a game at home, I think that is, you know, obviously a huge win for them. The Browns blowing out Cincinnati. Again, another quarterback. Now, Joe Burrow had an excuse. He's been injured. So we've not seen him in the preseason, and it looked like it on Sunday. It looked that way. The Falcons had a nice second half to finish off that game. And then, of course, you sit there and you look at the Packers' huge win there at Chicago. The Cowboys, we saw them demolish the Giants on Sunday Night Football. So obviously, all of those teams were pretty. You know, you can make a case that they are some of the winners of Saturday. Not that they just won the game, but they look good in doing it. But to me, the Dolphins just stick out. And of course, you have to mention the Jaguars. I have not mentioned the Jaguars Colts game. Jaguars went down in that game 21-17. They come back with two late touchdowns, win the game 31-21. Not a bad showing for his debut from Anthony Richardson. He did throw a pick, 24-37. Not bad numbers right there, 223 yards. Had a couple nice runs. Not a bad performance. Not bad. But it's gonna take a while for all that to come together in Indianapolis. So, you know, losers, obviously, the Jets. I mean, they stick out big time. I say one of the losers will be the Chargers. You got to win these games, man. If you're the Chargers, if you're going to have a chance to beat the Chiefs in the AFC West, you got to win games like you played on Sunday. They weren't able to do it. I say the Vikings are a definite loser, losing at home to the Buccaneers. The Steelers losing the way that they did, 30-7 to the 49ers. Those are some of my losers. I think probably the biggest loser, though, would be the Giants, losing 40-0 at home. A lot of, expectations for Daniel Jones and all of those, that whole crew up there, and for them to come out and get beat 40-0 on Sunday Night Football was something. My baller award for the NFL's got to be Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, it's just, who else could it be? I went over his stats, huge stat line, huge victory for the Dolphins. So congrats to him winning my ball award, the first one of the NFL season, man. Huge, 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 huge game for him. Looking at college, man, the big losers, obviously you got to have Alabama at the top of the list. You got to have Texas A&M right behind them. Alabama, to me, has more to lose, obviously, because of where they were ranked. And the SEC as a whole. I mean, those are two huge losses. Losing to Miami, Texas A&M was favored to win that game, and then obviously Alabama losing at home to Texas to non-conference opponents. We talked about that briefly at the top of the show. It's been a little bit of a rocky road so far for the SEC against non-conference opponents. So we'll see if they can get that straight, but obviously huge losses. Big winners around college football. Obviously, you have to start off, I think, with Texas. Vaulting themselves right into the playoff race, unquestionably. You sit there and look at Miami with the huge win over Texas A&M. You have to look at a team like, where am I at right now? I thought it was a really good win for Ole Miss there at Tulane. I could not forget about that football game. 37-20. Michael Pratt did not play in the game for Tulane, the quarterback. So that, Tulane was not quite themselves out of the American Athletic Conference. Very familiar with Tulane from last year. Really good football team. They were playing that game on their campus there in New Orleans. But Ole Miss went down there and took care of business. And that's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do, man. So, kudos to them. I would say Ole Miss is a really big winner. But the two biggest winners this weekend are unquestionably the Texas Longhorns and the Miami Hurricanes. And I think I would say that from a perspective here in the South, and I would also say that from a perspective nationally. One other winner I would put out there, and I kind of really hate to say this though, and that would be James Madison out of the Sun Belt Conference. Really good win at Virginia, but I kind of hate that it came at the expense of beating Virginia. We all know what happened with them losing three of their football players last year to the shooting. So I kind of hate that. But James Madison, really good win for them on the road, 36-35. James Madison is a really good program. They are out of the FCS. They are now into the Sun Belt. I think this is their second or third season in the Sun Belt, if I'm not mistaken. And it's time to start taking notice of schools like that. It just really is. It really is, man. And so... congrats to them. I thought that was a huge win for them, man. For me, my SEC baller of the week, I'm going to go with that Ole Miss game. And I'm going to go with Jackson Dart. I know there were some other good performances, but for me, this is one of the bigger wins inside the SEC this weekend. To go on the road to a tough place, despite the fact that Tulane did not have their quarterback, despite that, Jackson Dart, 17 for 27, 267 yards, two touchdowns. For me, he had 14 carries, 41 yards to add to that. Just getting the job done, and I think that's huge for the Ole Miss Rebels, who are trying to sit there and do, get into contention there in the SEC West. So, Jackson Dart, huge weekend. He wins my baller award here in the SEC. Anyway, man, we're going to close this particular episode out. Like I said, man, please like, subscribe, do all those things for this Ball About the South with C. Wood. Definitely appreciate you coming in. If it's your first time, I definitely hope it is not your last. We will be back at you again later on this week. We'll preview some of these other big games coming up this coming weekend right here on Ball About the South.